Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the first bonus episode of season 4 of the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast. I am your host, Ghost Joe, and if you've heard any of my other bonus episodes, you know I get right into the good stuff, right? So without further ado, here is part 2 of the Sleeping Prophet Edgar Cayce on the Right Headspace with John Wright. I hope you guys enjoy it. The Nat Man and I will talk to you guys next week for our Friday the 13th special. You're going to love it, so please don't miss it. And don't forget to subscribe so you get notifications when it comes out. So I'll talk to you guys later.
Good evening. You are entering a dimension where up is down, good is evil, and day is night. You've just made a wrong turn into the right headspace.
Everybody, I'm back with the second segment on Edgar Cayce. In the previous segment, I talked about a few different things, some background stuff, and I was kind of hoping to get into more detail about some of the predictions and things like that with this particular segment. I think the last thing I had spoken about was something along the lines of some of the different cures and some of the people that he had helped. One of them was his wife, Gertrude, who had fallen ill, supposedly with tuberculosis, and he was somehow able to do a reading, and unfortunately, they never, ever specify what it is that he winds up during the reading coming up with as a cure for her condition. But in the end, it notes that she was eventually cured from her tuberculosis. Now, this kind of, and again, just my skeptical mind, kind of has some flags that jump out for me. A lot of people suffer from tuberculosis at the time. Is it possible that she may have been misdiagnosed? But anyway, that's just my mind. So I'm going to continue on here. In any case, if you hear some noises in the background, it's probably my our little youngest cat, Monkey, making noises in the background. In any case, he winds up moving to Selma, Alabama, because, again, got to pay the bills. And he winds up getting a job with the Tressler photography firm. But what eventually winds up happening is people find out more and more information about him. There's a couple of articles about him, and he becomes very popular. So more and more people start to make requests for readings. And eventually he had received so many requests that he decided that he was going to give up his job and do the readings full time. Again, he did have some stipulations in place with this when he talked to Al Lane, that he would do it for free, that if anything should happen or if anything should harm anybody, that would be the end of it. He would no longer do it. As far as the process, how did he go about doing these things? How did he go into his trance? For the most part, typically he would kind of go into a room, take off his shoes, kind of like Mr. Rogers style, lay down on a couch, do some breathing exercises, and then fall into a trance. At that point, either Al Lane, Edgar's wife, Gertrude, or their oldest son, Hugh, would act as mediators. And they would kind of get him going, ask questions, clarification, wherever they could. And then they would also be the ones that would eventually record the information. Later on, they will hire a woman by the name of Gladys Davis, and she will come in, and she's a secretary, so she was capable of doing shorthand and transcribing the sessions so that this way those records could be kept for later on. In 1925, a gentleman by the name of Morton Blumenthal, he and, if I remember correctly, his brother, both worked in the New York Stock Exchange. They decided that they were going to front money because they believed in these kind of things, and they believed in Edgar Cayce and his abilities. They would front money for him and his family to move to Virginia Beach. They decided to form, in May of 1927, the Association of National Investigations. And that would be kind of like where all this stuff gets its start. Now, in order to protect the organization, to protect themselves, and to protect Edgar Cayce from any type of retribution, things of that nature, or legal cases, anybody who was going to be a client was going to have to join the association. And in the process of joining the association, they were going to have to sign an agreement And that agreement is kind of like a disclaimer, basically saying that they were members of this organization and they were taking part in what they referred to as psychic research. It's kind of like in today's day and age, if you go to see a medium or a psychic of some kind, one of the disclaimers is that this is for entertainment purposes only. So this way, if things don't necessarily come true, you don't have a leg to stand on. You can't go back after them, sue them, those types of things. In 1928, Moseley Brown, who's the head of the psychology department of Washington Lee University, which is also located in Virginia, he joins the board of the organization. Eventually, they start putting plans together to create kind of like a, they refer to it as a complex, but I refer to it more as kind of like something that's consistent with a campus. So it will, the plans made space for a lecture hall, a library, servants' quarters, a tennis court. They also had a vault that was built into the building so that this way they would be able to keep the readings and they would be collated and all these different things so that they could be kept over time. Other people would wind up there. One of the gentlemen that they wind up mentioning is a chemist by the name of Shikhar Bishi. According to what I was able to find out, he, along with Edgar Cayce, kind of put their brains together. And they produced a thing called a atonidine, is the best way I can say it. A-T-O-N-I-D-I-N-E. If you want, you can do like a cursory search on that, and you'll find out that most people, at least most chemists of this time frame, will basically say it's nothing major. Fast forward to 1931. Great Depression is hit. They're a couple of years into it. And as far as readings are concerned, he does have his typical standard, somewhere around two readings per day that he does. Again, he typically would ask people, he didn't charge them because, again, that was part of his deal. But what he would ask is if they could donate whatever it was they could donate, money, food, that sort of thing, so that this way he'd be able to take care of his family. 1931, a lot of his family members and their friends asked if it was possible that they could become psychics. And this starts this whole kind of like discussion of whether or not it's possible. And eventually they create study groups. The study groups would then meet individually with Edgar Cayce, and he would do different readings during the time that he spent with each of those different groups. In June of that year, they wind up breaking away because of a couple different things, money, that sort of thing. They wind up breaking away from the previous organization, and now they're going to start a new organization, which will be referred to as the Association for Research and Enlightenment, also known as ARE. Now, again, they're basically doing the same thing, same place, purchased the building from from the Blumenthal brothers. And then they also wind up doing the same basic concept of bringing people in, making them members of the association, the waivers, all that kind of stuff, and doing their quote unquote studies. One of the studies that they produced was called 100 Cases of Clairvoyance. It would be published and it would be put out there. People would investigate it or read through them. Most of those people who are scientists would not, they don't put a whole lot of stock into what comes out of this study, just simply because things weren't documented as far as how they went about doing all the different things with the study, how they documented the information. Did they do controls? Did they do blinds? Did they do all those things that you're kind of looking for when it comes to the scientific method? As time goes on, you're going to see some different things will develop. We get through the 1930s into the 1940s. A book will eventually be written about him, and it's called There Is a River. Once this book is published in 1943, you're going to see, again, another increase in interest in Edgar Cayce. So during the 1930s, he went from, or the 1920s into the 1930s, he went from two readings per day. That kind of bumped up into about four readings per day. By the time he gets to the 1940s, he had bumped it up to six per day. And then once we get into the U.S. joining the war, he then jumps into eight times per day. While he was doing the readings, for people who were typically had not heard from a loved one, believed that they were lost or something along those lines, and just wanted to know if they were safe, they had so many requests that he forced himself to do these things on a regular basis. He would do the readings, and the process of doing the readings, whatever it was that he was talking about, would kind of, or communicating with, would comment on how this was eventually going to take its toll on him, would probably eventually lead him to exhaustion and potentially take his life. Just to give you an example, from June of 1943 to June of 1944, he will do a total of 1,385 readings. He would eventually die on January 3rd of 1945. Just prior to this, he had collapsed from exhaustion, and he and his wife had moved from Virginia Beach out into the mountains to kind of like get away from everything. Unfortunately, that didn't do much for him. The ARE will eventually become the keepers of all of Edgar Casey's, or I shouldn't say all, I can't make that claim, but at least 14,000 of Edgar Casey's readings. Some of those things are considered, we'll call it somewhat controversial. Why? Because of some of the topics that they deal with. One of the examples was the idea of, he did a reading on the different races, meaning different ethnic races. If I remember correctly, it was white, black, brown, yellow, red, something along those lines. And that all those different groups have been created at the same exact time, but just in different parts of the earth. Another one, which tends to be somewhat controversial, but I'm very interested in it, is the myth of Atlantis. Is it real, or was it just something that Plato came up with, which was based on kind of what happened with the Minoans, that sort of deal? You talk about numbers. I mean, you could all go online, take a look at Atlantis. As far as his connection to it, one of the first things I had ever heard about him was the prediction of Atlantis, or the road of Atlantis, being discovered in the Caribbean. And then I want to say, I should have done my homework here. It was the late 1960s, if I remember correctly. I want to say it was like 1967, 1968. You had the Bimini Road appear off of Bimini Island in the Bahamas. Some people claim it's the road that will eventually lead to Atlantis. Other people claim it's other things. Even maybe possibly a stop along the way when the Zhang He was making his way around the world for the Chinese, all this other stuff. In any case, as far as Atlantis is concerned, he did make several predictions about Bimini Road. That one came true, or depending upon how you want to look at it, for the most part, kind of came true. Another one about the Hall of Records, which was eventually discovered. Or I shouldn't say it was discovered, but there's a cavity that was discovered under the left paw of the Sphinx. When it comes to the cures, most science-based people, chemists, things like that, doctors, will tell you that the great majority of what he did was based on homeopathic methods of that time and of that region, or some of the different regions in that part of the United States. I'm not sure if I want to go that far. Some will refer to it as quackery. I kind of look at it as a combination of some Eastern philosophy based with some down home kind of common sense type things that you might see in the South during that time frame. So many other things. All right. So some people will claim that he predicted the stock market crash. The crash occurs in 1929. And during one of his readings with a gentleman who was involved with the stock market, he did make mention in February of 1925 that there would be some, volatility in the market, and that the man should take some type of caution. Supposedly, there was a reiteration of that a little bit further down the road, a little bit closer to 1929, where he kind of reiterates that same idea of taking caution. Supposedly, in 1935, he predicts World War II, that it's going to break out. That's a tough one. By 1935, just about everybody knew that the Germans were going to start making advances and pushing. And we know that the Japanese were also doing those same things at the same time. We know the Austrians were tied to the Germans. I kind of look at the Gulf Breeze Six. The Gulf Breeze Six supposedly predicted the Gulf War, which kind of makes me chuckle. Why? Because I was a teenager in college. And just reading the newspapers, the headlines, these guys did it like a few months, like 2 months or whatever it was, 90 days or 3 months before the war actually took place. And there was their prediction that it was going to happen. I was 19. I could have predicted that just by looking at the newspaper clippings. So that could be a possible explanation of this one. In 1934, he did several readings where a group of people called the Essenes will be included in several different readings over that time frame. If you're wondering who they are the people who are given credit for the Dead Sea Scrolls. So some people are making the connection that when he talked about them, that he was also talking about the potential for the Dead Sea Scrolls. And those were discovered eventually in 1947 in that borderland area along what you would consider modern day Israel, most likely Judea. Question is, how do you look at this guy? If I'm going to be the skeptic, I would probably go down the same road that most of the skeptics do, which is some of the things are pretty much common sense stuff. Some of the stuff, not so much. I'm going to say it this way. It's hard to read and find out a lot of good information from this because of the simple fact that a lot of the information is either secondary or coming from secondary or tertiary sources. And the problem with that is that person's interpretation of that information is now being passed on to you. I would always tell people, if you can get a hold of primary sources, go based upon those primary sources, because what can potentially happen is those things will change based upon somebody else's interpretation. And their interpretation is going to be based upon how they were raised, their belief systems, those types of things. In the end, I think it's a great story. It's fascinating, some of the information that you can get about this guy. But unfortunately, like I said before, if you want like firsthand info, it's stuck behind a paywall. You would have to join organizations, pay fees, that kind of stuff. I don't know if I'm willing to do that just yet. Hopefully this kind of piqued your curiosity. And it's going to make you go out there and take a look at the information yourself. If you agree with me, great. If you don't agree with me, that's fine. You're all welcome to your opinions. Signing off for now, Joe, I'm going to send it back to you. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Podcast. And thank you to all my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out WarpedRealityPodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you would like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or WarpedRealityPodcast.com. Have a great night, everyone, and don't forget to change your thoughts.